evening, ladies and gentlemen. As the superintendent this evening, I will begin the meeting until a president is elected with our new board. Assisting me this evening is the board student representative, Ms. Kendra McPhail. Ms. McPhail, can you please determine a quorum?
Superintendent Promo, all members are present.
Ms. McPhail, can you please read the board goals?
Matanuska-Susitna Borough School District. Vision, mission, beliefs, values, goals, and objectives. Vision. MatSU Borough School District will be a model of excellence in teaching, learning, and engaging all students. Mission. MatSU Borough School District prepares students for success. Beliefs. We believe that all students can and want to learn. Success breeds success. The needs and best interests of students drive all decisions. Stakeholders' participation is crucial to students' success. Core values: stewardship, accountability, empathy, quality, integrity, efficiency, respect, collaboration, commitment. Goals: we will improve student success, achievement, and performance by focusing on their career and college readiness. We will increase the graduation rate. Our schools will welcome families and community members in the education of our youth. We will create and maintain a safe and healthy environment for our students and staff. Annual objectives and accountability, assessed by quarterly metrics and timelines.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. McPhail. At this time, could you please honor us by saying the first Pledge of Allegiance with our new board?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. At this time, we are on item 2, oath of office. As per Alaska Statute 14.12.090 and School Board Policy 9224, school board members before taking office shall take and sign the following oath. At this time, would Member Rutherford and Member Welton please join me at the flag? Ms. McPhail will assist me in the oath of office.
You can raise your right hand. And repeat after me. And I don't know if you guys can get it, oh, just a little bit. Please repeat after me. I state your name, do solemnly swear.
I Sarah Welton, do solemnly swear
that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Alaska.
And the Constitution of the State of Alaska.
And that I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially discharge my duties.
And I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially discharge my duties.
As a school board member, to the best of my ability. Thank you, and welcome to the board.
Thank you.
At this time, according to Alaska Statute 14.14.070 and our School Board Policy 9120, within 7 days it states that after the certification of the results of a regular school election is made, the school board shall meet and elect one of its members as president, one of its members as vice president, and one of its members as a clerk. Please know that Ms. Rutherford and Ms. Welton were certified last night by our borough. And at this time, I would like to begin the election of officers. It will begin with the president. Once a president is elected, that person will take over the gavel.
I would like to nominate Sarah Welton for president.
I would like to nominate Susan Bowser for president.
Are there any other nominees? Please note that a second is not required. At this time, we have two nominees, and according to policy, the election and voting will be done by a secret ballot. The ballots will then be turned in to our board secretary, Stacy Escobedo, and certified as well by our student representative, Kendra McPhail. Please note that each board member has one choice, Member Welton or Member Pauger. Once completed, Ms. McPhail will pick up the ballots.
Susan Pauger is the school board president.
Thank you, Ms. McPhail. At this time, I will pass the gavel to our new president, Ms. Pauger. She will determine the vice president and board clerk. After that time, we will take a short recess to rearrange the board seating. So I will pass the gavel.
Okay, I'd like to open nominations for vice president. A second is not needed.
I'd like to nominate Neil Lacey.
I'd like to nominate Eric Cordero.
Are there any more nominations? All right, we'll do it the same way, and your ballot will be on its way down to you.
Eric Cordero is the VP.
I would now like to open nominations for board clerk.
I'll nominate Debbie Rutherford.
And I'd like to nominate Sarah Welton.
All right, thank you. Ballots will be on their way.
Sarah Welton is the board clerk.
We'll take a 5-minute recess. Okay, we're ready to come back into session. We have approval of the agenda is next on our agenda.
I move to approve the agenda.
I'll second it.
The agenda's been moved and seconded. There are no changes. Our next is persons to be heard on non-agenda. I'm sorry. Are there any objections? Our next item of business is persons to be heard on non-agenda items. I would like to ask the board clerk to read the rules for non-agenda items.
I see. You're going to get me on this one. Okay. Okay. Specifically under the agenda item, persons to be heard on non-agenda items, the following guidelines apply. The speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for public comment as they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-aged children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributable to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard or may be handled in executive session or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing this meeting. The board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room cleared if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designee or take the issue under advisement. And there's a maximum of 1 hour per meeting. We have our first half hour now. And the first person who is on our list is Richard Webb. Excuse me, you need to be up at the
Mr. Webb, the food pantry is an action item that we have on our agenda. This is for items that are not on the agenda this evening.
I didn't know that was it on the agenda.
It is. It's just a little bit later in the meeting.
Okay.
Would that be okay?
Sorry.
All right.
Our next is Lori Miner.
Good evening, Dr. Paramo, School Board President Powger, and board members. My name is Lori Miner. I am the president of the Classified Employees Association. I would like to take this opportunity to welcome our new board members, Debbie Rutherford and Sarah Welton, and congratulate the new board president. I would also like to introduce to you our executive board, our Vice President Ernie Kirby, our Secretary Chris Sawyer, our Treasurer Linda Ferris, our Vice Treasurer Carol Haddow, our members at large, Linda Larson, Nedra Olson, Karen Salisbury, Lynn Nordland, Judy Barnhart, Mary Parrish, and our building reps that are here this evening from Connect Christy Alcock and from Teal and Angela Phillips. We are the support staff of approximately 800 employees who work here in the Mat-Su Borough School District with you. I also would like to thank Dr. Paramo for giving us the opportunity to take advantage of the Parent-Teacher Conference Day on October 25th and 26th. We have taken the opportunity to turn that into a professional development day for our special ed assistants, who will be receiving specialized training on the topic of sexual harassment and bullying intervention and prevention. We have a national trainer out of our training cadre that will come up from Arkansas and assist me in presenting on those 2 days. Thank you for your time. We're looking forward to a great year working with you.
Is there anyone else who would like to be heard on non-agenda items? Seeing no one, we'll move on to administrative reports. I'm sorry, borough and city reports. I see the Wasilla manager here.
Welcome, Madam President, board members. My name is Bert Cottle, City of Wasilla. I have three items to bring forward to you tonight. First one is a library update. On October 5th, we were the borough recorded in the platting on the library land. So we have one more borough planning meeting to go through, and then we have two readings in front of the borough assembly before the deed and the land is actually transferred over to us. So we're getting closer. So we hope by December 15th to have a sign up that says Home of the Future Wasilla Library. Number two is after the recent floods here a couple weeks ago, we went through upgrading and what-ifs on our sports center out at the Menard Center. Part of that is upgrading our kitchen. So we were fortunate enough to get permission from the superintendent, and I went over to the food preparation place, the central kitchen, and met with Karen and Barb over there. They were great. They showed me what a 150-gallon kettle looks like, as well as things I didn't understand until then. So I just want to thank you for the cooperation that we have between the different agencies. Sometimes that's not the case in all agencies. So it's nice to be able to call up when you don't know the answer and find somebody that did. Or if they didn't, and what they did for me then was they sent me next door to Job Corps. So it was nice to have that connection, so I thank you for that. And finally, I know this comes up later in the agenda tonight, but the City of Wauseau also supports Resolution 13-025. That's in supporting the food pantry and their storage of food over at the old Iditarod School. I guess we can call that now. It's the old Iditarod. We would utilize that in case of an emergency. We've had meetings with them, and it fits into our emergency operation plan. So we would like that to continue if at all possible. So thank you.
Is there anyone here from City of Palmer? And I don't see anyone from the borough. So with that, we'll move on. Our next is administrative reports now.
Thank you, Madam President. With us this evening is one of our fantastic teachers, Mr. Paul Morley, and many more of some of our fantastic students, both current, I believe, and prior, because I do see a graduate in the crowd. They're here to speak on some experiential learning that took place. Mr. Morley, through his job here in the district, takes a little alternative look to education in the summers to really provide students an opportunity for education in a different mode, I guess. And as part of our district of having different choices and different opportunities, he's here to highlight one that happened this past summer called the Archaeology Field School class.
Thank you, Dr. Paramo. Greetings, members of the boards, including our new president. I'm here with three of my students. We're going to tell you about the Archaeology Field School. I'm a teacher at Burchell High School. I teach English, and this is one of the things I do. We intended to have the archaeologist with us, Robert Sattler from Tanana Chiefs Conference, who's been really central in our cooperative agreement between Tanana Chiefs and Burchell High. But he's had a dig that he's had to do on a spur of the moment and had to cancel his flight here, so I'm going to try to speak for him. I'm going to provide a little introduction, and then I'm going to turn the microphone over to the students, let them tell their own stories. But really briefly, the program started in 2005 with funding from the Tanana Chiefs Conference and a 21st Century Learning Center grant. Since then, we've done it five times. Some 80 students have participated. We go to remote sites on the Yukon River, and one year we went to the Brooks Range. Students get course credit for frontier literature, Alaskan wilderness studies, and a newly approved course, Principles of Archaeology. So they're learning in an incomparable hands-on kind of environment. They do all their planning for 9 days out in the field. They attend classes, and then they do real scientific research under the guidance of certified teachers and professional archaeologists. Living and working in the bush camp simultaneously gives students an unparalleled opportunity to learn about cooperation, conflict resolution, seeing a task to completion. The program has got some statewide recognition. It was selected with 17 other exemplary programs around the state to be included in the Alaskan Environmental Literacy Plan, which is going to be released next year. Thielen Middle School's River Rangers was also included in that. There's a draft online if you want to look at that and learn more about the Environmental Literacy Plan. Funding over the next 3 years has been expanded through Tanana Chief getting a National Science Foundation grant. So that will give us an opportunity to increase our facilities on the site. It will also give us an opportunity to get outside evaluation long-term to see how this impacts student learning. So I'm going to ask the students to come up and briefly introduce themselves, and we'll start the show.
Hi, I'm Cody, and right here we're learning how to do team building. So when we're on the field, we know how to learn as a team. And right here we had to learn about health and safety just in case if someone got hurt. while we're in the dig, we could help them out. And right here is us learning how to remove someone from a spot without injuring them. And right here is where we depart from Rochelle to Calico Bluff.
My name is Simon, and okay, right here, this is us leaving, and you know, we're taking down notes, just sightseeing, looking at some stuff. Right here, this is us on the Yukon River on our way to the actual campsite. This is when we arrived. This is a huge tent. It's where we store our things, and we're just putting it together.
I'm Aaron, by the way, Aaron McKenzie. This was us just kind of clearing out a bunch of down trees and things that have fallen in the area where we had to walk, like to get to and from our tents into the kitchen. This was pretty much where we were living, where we were having our meals and everything, and you know, kind of going over what we were going to do for the day. There was three groups, like the entire group was split into three separate groups, and things like who was going to make the meals, who was going to clean up, and who was going to do camp duties was on a rotation schedule, so not one group was doing everything. Everybody was kind of sharing the load. This was in June. This is Bob Sattler, by the way. And they found an area with some ice to help keep our food from, you know, turning. This is the dig site where we where we dug the whole time. And this was what it looked like when we got here. And this is Bob Sattler basically giving us the rundown, telling us what we're going to be looking for. This was probably a couple days in, or maybe even the first day. I don't know. But this was real early on, looking for our artifacts. Continue.
We call these people the screeners. Screeners, right? And they, shifters. You pretty much just shake it to find the little pieces of artifacts. And this shows the depth of how far you dig, and how far you go resembles how many years are down there.
And that, like, dark soil layer is where we found most of the artifacts, because that was the time when the people were there. 2,000 years ago.
Yeah, the artifacts were 2,000 years old. And this is Andy. He lives on the dig site, and he was just showing us how to make baskets out of bark and other organic stuff. This is a couple people collecting bark. Another person skinning the tree.
And this was how far you cut into the tree was really important, because it was really precise so that when we removed the bark, it didn't injure or cause scarring to the tree, and it got to continue to grow.
Yeah. There's just a picture.
And then this was us making it, all of our crafts that they showed us how to do.
This is the measurement of the baskets, because you don't want to go too over or too little, or else it won't work. And there's Andy helping, Josh. And here's two people that finished their basket. And this was our hike all the way up to Calico Bluff. It's like 13.
And that little cleared area of land, like behind that kid's head, that was the property where we were digging at. So it was pretty
far.
Yeah. Clearly we had some pretty long days. I'm pretty sure this was lunchtime. I don't even think this was dinner yet, like halfway through the day. We would get up at 7 and get to the dig site by 8, and then we would be there till like 6 o'clock at night, I think, and then we'd go to bed at 10:30. So it was clearly tough to adjust to our new schedules. This was our area. This was the kind of like the dining room, just sort of like commons area where everybody kind of, you know, talked about their day and how everything went. And that that was our classroom pretty much. Most of the time we were outside doing our lessons, our frontier literature. But on the days when it was pouring rain or it was just way too hot, we went into that little structure area out of the elements. This was our last day, like the night before we were leaving. There was this bear that kept harassing the area that they lived on, Kate and Andy, and stealing all their dried fish. And so the very last night, everyone's heading to their tents to go to bed, and we heard a gunshot. And we went over there, and he had finally gotten the bear. And this was my very first experience with a real wild bear. And I got to skin it, which is really cool. And this was the dig site, probably the either, I want to say the last day or 2 days before last day. Anyways, this is near the end. As you can see, it's a whole grid area, and everything was really carefully excavated so we didn't miss anything. This is our grid. This is part of what we were looking for. This was argillite, and it was tools that were used and chipped from each other to like make arrowheads and weapons, over 2,000 years old. And this, where you can see the rocks sticking out right there, that was the hearth and like their fire pit where they had their meals and had their fire circle that we got to have overnight.
And this is the dig site pretty much when we were done. You know, we had to fill it back in and threw a bunch of sticks, logs, and just covered it back up. This is the dirt. It's a group shot after everything was done. Everybody's just sitting.
Our parents have access through iParent. Our students have access through iStudent. Parents can enroll through iEnroll. There's quite a few different features of that program. We have to report what's called an OASIS report to the state, which has a single identifier for every student in Alaska Public Schools. So just to let you know, the system is quite complex, and so I'm going to make it simple. Last year, the number of actual bodies in our schools was 17,553. Please know, though, that is not the ADM, because the average daily membership is how many bodies over a 20-day period. And sometimes students leave, and sometimes students come in during those 20 days. So if a student was only here 10 out of those 20 days, if they came halfway through the count period, they really are counted, multiplied by 0.5. That student, even though they may stay the rest of the year. The same is true that if they're here only half during the count and they leave, say, to go to the lower 48, they would still count as half and we would be able to keep those funds. So the actual student numbers last year were 17,553. Our projected enrollment of the actual number of individual students, and this is full-time or part-time, the number of kids that we see, was 17,535. We are halfway through the count, or a little bit more than halfway through the count, and we have 17,539 students, which is five over our projection that we made last year. So every day we've been finalizing and sorting these numbers and getting them correct. Even within the first quarter of school, which ended last Friday, we've had students move from school to school. And the tricky part is, what I'm going to show you on the next slide, is that the funding for Alaska schools is really based off of a school factor determined by the size of the school. So when our students move from small attendance areas to large attendance areas, the revenue generated per student changes. And that's why this, again, is a kind of persnickety number. So what does that enrollment look like versus ADM and FTE? I mentioned that average daily membership is the ADM, and think of the word average. That is the 20-day average of your enrollment over the count period, which is those first 20 days in October. FTE is full-time equivalent, just like in industry world. Our school world has full-time equivalents. We have some schools that generate smaller FTE because of the type of school they are. And the most easiest one to reference is a homeschool child, either in a charter homeschool or a district neighborhood charter school. The FTE right off the bat is 0.8 for students in those schools. So we have students move around, and our mobility in the Matsubara School District, as of, we had an audit done 5 years ago, our mobility in Matsu was 40%. So throughout an entire year, 40% of our students move in, out, or change schools. So that's quite mobility. Hence, we have a guaranteed and viable curriculum so that they can move school to school and still be in the same place. But if you notice, last year's enrollment was 17,553, the number I referenced. We had 17,334 students in ADM, which was 98.8%. We predicted within 98.8% of the correct student enrollment. This year, our enrollment we predicted to be 17,535, and we came in at 17,539, which is above our enrollment prediction. But due to the ADM and the movement over these 20 days thus far, that makes up, we were 98.5% correct. And those students then are 17,271. So it's quite lower than last year. And that is due again to the ADM, the average. However, our current year full-time equivalent rises a little above that, and that's due just to the location of the schools. And this makes it really important because passing those bonds and opening those new schools is actually going to help the FTE number. One of the beautiful things about Alaska is that they honor and value small learning sites. So they have a prime size of a high school that they would like to see, which is about 900 to 1,000 kids. Once we put more than 1,000 kids in a single building, you get less percentage of funds, if you will, per student. Similar, if you will, to the homeschool. So our largest school in a neighborhood is Wasilla High School. Every student in Wasilla High generates 0.84 for revenue purposes. And so if we have open up a new school down Kinnick and actually have not built too large of sites, the state actually honors districts by paying them more money to educate their kids. They actually value small school sites. Elementary school site is 400 to 450, and that's how we, most of ours are right in that target area to maximize. Having that new middle high school is actually going to add value the moment that we open it. So I just wanted to share those numbers because it is tricky, but knowing that the FTE is lower than the enrollment, that ADM calculation is $2,477,535 off of the mark. We have most of our kids in the core area. We are under enrollment significantly in Sutton Elementary. We are under enrollment up north as well in Sioux Valley, as well as Houston schools. Those schools are prime size schools which generate more FTE for kids. So by those same kids moving into the core area, the funding of what we guessed where the funding locations would be changed. And therefore, the amount of revenue changed. And so these are every day that you see these numbers, they change. Yesterday was a different picture. Today is a different picture. So the numbers will be absolutely certified in November by the state, and then we will have a solid number. But the good news is about every day we gain about 5 kids. So, questions?
Through the chair, Dr. Paramo, what's the deadline for the final number for the state to be able to say this is how much money the school district will receive?
Through the chair, Mr. Forrest, what is the last day?
We look for the certification mid-November.
Okay. Two follow-up questions on that. One, if a district goes through a radical change in enrollment after that deadline, is there a mechanism to request a change, or there is no?
Okay.
And the second one is, my understanding was that part of the budget amendment was based on the low enrollment, potential low enrollment, so I wonder why we had to do this at the last meeting and not wait until these numbers were solid.
These are, you know, they're not going to change by significantly from here out, and basically we need to keep those, a budget is a plan, and you keep that plan up to date, and monthly we want to keep the board informed. I chose not to really wait until it was a big surprise, and so we need to be just clarify that the students are here, the enrolled students, they actually are here. The locations of schools for which we determined or thought the students would be, they're not in those schools. They're in different schools which generate different revenue. Because that is such a significant number, Mr. Cordero, I asked Mr. Forrest to present it, just so it wouldn't be a surprise. But I know that hope isn't a strategy, but I am hoping that this is going to continue to change so it won't be such bad news.
Mr. Cordero, actually, the budget amendment was for the on behalf of that we incorrectly calculated, and we informed the board that we had to recalculate the on behalf of. So we amended the budget so that we could resubmit to the state with the correct on behalf of. Mm-hmm. Tonight you received your first set of financials, and you'll see updates as you have in the past every month thereafter. And as Dr. Paramo mentioned, we will update the budget when we have more information, mm-hmm. and you'll see that.
And I understand the confusion because there was a slide
yep.
that did show the enrollment during that time.
Right.
Yeah. But any questions that we can answer, we'd certainly like to. But it is enrollment versus ADM versus FTE. We deal with all of those through revenue metrics at the state level.
So when you projected this year's budget, you projected 17,539 students, but you actually only projected 17,283 as a whole for financially. Is that correct?
No, actually, and I'm going to take the blame on this one. Basically, this number, this 17,553 Dr. Paramo referred to as the previous year enrollment, we actually weren't able to get those numbers last year. So it's this year we've actually been able to see the enrollment on a daily basis.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, the enrollment of 17,539 as of today, we predicted or projected an ADM, average daily membership, of 17,535. So we're at 17,271 average daily membership. And generally, the average daily membership and the FTE are going to be close. And you can see that on average, last year we were 98.8% of enrollment. We're 98.5% of enrollment today on the ADM. But we were predicting an ADM of 17,535, hence the lowered revenue estimate. And I will take the blame for the confusion that occurred there. To be honest with you, I was confused. So we've been saying 17,535. That's the ADM to generate the revenue for the budget. Had we come in, as you can see, we have 17,539 students. And as Dr. Paramos mentioned, if they'd been in the right places, if we'd had more students enroll. So if we'd come back, for example, to the 17,553 enrollment, that 2,477,000 would be dramatically lower. So we're only down 14 students. from last year in enrollment. But because of the ADM calculation, we're down more than expected on the revenue. So I agree with Dr. Paramo. Hope's not a strategy, but every day more kids are showing up. So, but we are going to have, and as Mr. Cordero correctly pointed out, we did present to you that this is a issue we're going to need to deal with, and we've taken steps to deal with it in the current year. But the year's not over. As Mr. Cordero points out, we won't have the certified number till November.
Just one quick follow-up. So we're down, if I remember the projections last year, we projected 1.5 to 2% growth. So we didn't project the even growth of 17,535. So we're down 300 or 400 kids than what we projected last year, and we based the budget off of that. Is that what I'm reading here?
We're down about 180 kids.
200 kids down.
Yeah, from the projection.
Which puts you do the projection on the ADM. However, so we're about 200 kids down on that ADM. Is that what I'm hearing? And that's where the $2,477,000 is shortfalling.
That's right. We used 17,535 as the ADM number.
So what was the projection of kids that we were supposed to have, not the ADM number?
And again, I'll take the blame for the confusion there. We weren't projecting enrollment. We were projecting ADM. We will be projecting both next year.
So if we're $2,477,000 short on our budget right now, what are we going to do?
As we shared last meeting, we used our reserve, which is $1.6
million. I apologize. I wasn't here last meeting.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, we went through and targeted those areas for which we are using. So $1.6 million our reserve, which will mean we won't have a reserve moving into next year to budget in. We do that sometimes. We changed any non-school area. We put a hiring freeze. So basically in not in the teaching and learning, so for teachers and aides, things like that in schools, we shifted teachers around, shifted aides around to be sure that we had, you know, kids and learning covered. And we took a freeze in IT, we took a freeze in custodians, and we took a freeze in business. And the reason that is as you know, the manner in which school districts do contracts is contracts for certified for a year. So all contracts had to be honored for a year. So the only other areas that we could reduce in are non-contracted areas. But we made the decision to keep the classrooms whole, keep the students in the schools whole, and make the adjustments as we move through. And as students come, we'll hire those back.
And I'll leave it with one other comment, and that is if we had a reserve account that we could put money into without having to split it with a borough, our reserve account, I assume, would have been $4 to $6-8 million. So this is what we have a reserve for, this kind of issue, but we don't have that due to the borough ordinance that doesn't allow us to have a reserve. Is that correct?
That's correct. If we'd been allowed to build the reserve with the funds that we moved essentially to the CIP projects, not that those projects weren't needed also, but if we'd had the reserve, then we could have smoothed the impact of this, and there would have been negligible impact on the operations of the district for this year. Without that reserve, which, as the board has heard me say over and over again, is strongly recommended by the Government Finance Officers Association. It was 16, we grew 200 and some odd kids the previous year.
I think it was about 16-9.
16. It's...
$16,000, that was the ADM versus the actual. So.
Mm-hmm. This one topic will be brief if there aren't any questions. And Mr. Forrest, the bond project update, please.
Members of the board, as we heard at the assembly meeting yesterday, due to the floods and the other issues, of course, the borough has been dealing with related to the floods, they have not produced your weekly update in about 3 weeks now. So the latest weekly update has not been updated. At the meeting on Monday, the joint luncheon between the borough and the board, there were questions brought up regarding some of the school projects from this year, the roofs, and certainly, of course, the Palmer track. It was explained then that the borough is well aware that the roofs have not been completed, and they're well aware that the track absolutely must be re-engineered. That was further reiterated at the board at the borough meeting last night. So the borough is aware of the issues, and my assumption is that they will start to move more rapidly on those projects. They have named a borough project liaison and or manager, Mr. Bob Bechtel. Robert Bechtel of the borough will be starting to work on the school projects and acting as a liaison with the district.
Is Mr. Bechtel a new staff, or is he just adding on the load onto his existing position?
Mr. Bechtel is an existing staff. He does have fairly decent experience with K-12 construction. He helped build many of the schools you have here and remodel. In addition to that, he was a program manager for, I think he mentioned, the building of five new schools in Anchorage prior to coming to the borough.
The question was, is this his primary position, or is this just added on to his primary position?
They have altered, according to Mr. Bechtel, they have altered his position somewhat. This is an add-on, but they have relieved him of a few other duties. So it is an add-on.
One other follow-up question, the Palmer turf field. I've been reading a lot about it, went over and looked at it, and my understanding, the school district did advise the borough on how to properly build that field. Is that correct, or at least give them some advice on that?
Yes, in October of 2011, we met an initial meeting with athletic directors, members of the borough project management team, and we did reiterate our belief and desire that an extensive drain system to include slot drains around the entire track is the proper way to install artificial turf fields.
Is Colonies that way?
No, sir, not at this time.
Is Colonies going to end up like Palmer's?
We reiterated our position to the borough at the meeting on Monday. Mr. Woods at the meeting last night reiterated actually more strongly than we did. He said that the school district really is stating that we feel drains should be installed on all tracks.
Does that part of the bid abstract, or is that going to be additional money that's somehow coming from somewhere?
When we originally put the bond package together, I called Field Turf, who is the primary contractor for the installation of these turf fields, and used information from Field Turf plus my own experience with the recent installation in California, and that $3 million, which is in the budget, the bond budget for every single site, is more than adequate to install these fields with an adequate drainage system.
But that wasn't in the bond package that went out for bid, I assume. Those drains were not in that?
It's my understanding that the engineering firm stated that this is Alaska and the soils are different here and they didn't need the drains.
Well, what do we got, permafrost different? Or what's the difference in our soils than anybody else's soil? We're sitting on a sand pit, for crying out loud, in the valley.
I think our comment is that we believe that adequate drainage with slot drains is the way to install these fields.
One last thing on the roofs. Have all our schools that are leaking going to have their roofs fixed, or is it just part of them? Because I know some of the schools that are leaking are not being fixed. So what's going on there?
our facilities department has been working with the borough project managers. They've developed a priority list. The borough project managers and our facilities department, I believe, are in agreement as to which schools should be done first, and that we believe, it's our belief, that funds from the 2010 bond, which authorized roof repairs, should be used to do that. There appears to be disagreement within the borough as to whether or not that would be authorized use of those funds.
But it was bonded for the funds. The bonding was, the Mat Valley citizens voted on a bond, and part of the bond was X amount of money to fix roofs. And now we're not going to fix roofs?
It's my understanding that there is a discussion taking place, and I don't have this firsthand, so please take this with a grain of salt. There's a discussion taking place that, as with our bond, the ballot language and or the bond sales language was specific as to which buildings could be repaired. And therefore, they're saying they cannot amend that language to allow the repair of additional facilities. I will go on record as stating, as the board knows, personally responsible for well in excess of $1.6 billion in school bond sales. That language is foreign to me. It is not necessary under the IRS code. They have a different bond council. I would not use that bond council.
Thank you, Mr. Forrest. We will move on, and Kendra, if you'll give us your report.
Student Advisory Board is working to partner up with our neighbor schools to build a connection of leadership and service. Teeling Middle School and Career Technical High School are going to have a cleanup day throughout their building as well as outside. Once a meeting, we have time set aside where we learn new leadership skills, such as writing a resolution or how to write an agenda. Some reoccurring topics that have been brought up in our past two meetings are ATMs in the high schools and computer speed in all schools. We are also looking for solutions for issues that will be presented at later meetings. And our next student advisory board meeting is November 14th at Career Tech, starting at 9 a.m.
Thank you. Next on our agenda is the consent.
I move the consent agenda A, minutes September 19, 2012, B, 13-024 high school graduation qualifying exam waivers, C, 13-027 recommendation for certified new hires, D, 13-028 recommendation for rehire or retired teachers.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Are there any objections? Seeing none, that passes. Next on the agenda is our action items. Can I have someone move item A?
I'll move item 13-010, second reading of BP 5126, awards for achievement.
I'll second.
Do we have any public comments on this item? Do we have a staff report?
Madam President, we are available to answer questions from the board if needed. Thank you.
So it's open for discussion. Anyone have comments on this?
And just for the listening audience, what does this actually do?
BP 5126, awards for achievement. The revisions are being proposed to simplify the process for recognizing academic excellence. As you see in that BP, there's specific credits that a student needs. Those actually have been outdated for some time. We added civics.
And prior to that, we added a mathematics credit. So we would like just to replace the statement with the needed credits rather than a specific number.
Okay. Does anyone have any objections on this? No, we don't have our voting, so with no objections, that passes. Thank you.
I would like to move 13-026, AASB Youth Leadership Institute.
Second.
Do we have anyone from the public who'd like to vote? Who would like to make comment on this item? All right, do we have a staff report?
Madam President, the request to send six youth to the conference was made by the Student Advisory Board. And the cost for that is listed, a total of $3,067 would cover the 4 days for those students.
Mr. Larson?
And chaperone, correct? You said six students and chaperone.
Correct. We will send a chaperone.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry. Does this money come out of the school board budget?
That is correct.
Mr. Cordero?
Through the President. Dr. Brahma, what is the mechanism that those selected to attend utilize to share their experiences with other students that didn't have that opportunity?
Through the President, I'd like Kendra McPhail to speak on that.
The OSOP conference is a very beneficial conference for all students who are able to go.
If you could just specifically answer, once the students go, those six students, how are they going to disseminate the information?
We will form a PowerPoint or a report to present to the school board on leadership skills that we learned and how we benefited from it and what we can bring to the district.
How would you share with students? I think the board, they're going to attend as well, so you would share this at your student government. There's different representatives from different schools, so they would share those back.
We would foster it into our own individual schools by using the skills and ideas that we learned at the leadership conference in the institute and apply it throughout our own individual schools.
Okay, if there's no more questions, let's vote on that. Are there any objections to passing this and sending students? Seeing none, that item passes.
I'd like to move that we 13-029 proposed changes to the Alaska Association of School Boards bylaws and constitution.
Would anyone like to make public comment on this item?
I'll second.
Sorry. Would anyone like to make comment on this? Is there a staff report?
Madam President, this agenda item was placed on here when the agenda was created, and the clerk can comment on those, but basically they're just changes to the bylaws and constitution. They're written as is, and Ms. Welton may have some additional comments. But they will request a vote of our board at the AASB conference.
I don't have any comments other than they're just making changes so that they can plan ahead is one of the changes to know when the meetings are and where.
Does our board need to vote on this? Yes? Okay, is there any comment from the board? Any objections? All right, this also passes.
I'd like to move 13-030 resolution, 13004 Knick Goose Bay site recommendation.
Hold a second.
Do we have any public who'd like to comment on this? A staff report?
Madam President, Mr. Fulp and Mr. Forrest can come to the podium in case there's any questions. The resolution is pretty straightforward, but if there are any questions, we're available. Thank you.
Member Welton?
I need to abstain from voting on this, so you cannot just do an all vote, you know, of way to get through this. My children own property near this site, and I feel that it would be a conflict of interest for me to vote on it, so I will abstain. Thank you.
Does anybody have questions?
Member Gaddis?
I don't know. We've got some. Either I'm shorter. There we go. Combination. I don't have any questions, but I am on the school site selection, and I wanted to make the comment that we've gone around and around and really studied a lot of sites in that area. We needed a school there built yesterday, so I would ask that we forward this resolution and accept it and send it up to the borough to get going so we can be ready to build a school come spring.
Mr. Larson?
I'm also on the school site selection committee, and this was an arduous, long process through a matrix system with our hiring a professional to go over the site growth, population growth, and areas. So this site that was selection is within that matrix area. There was 20-some sites in that area. And I, again, they went through a long process of soil, everything from soil to utilities through a matrix system, and this is a site that came up that was actually for sale. So the process took almost a year to get through.
Mr. Larson, I'm hoping with this that they also got roads to the school site.
There's probably a bridge that we didn't predict, but that was a big consideration here also.
Okay.
This is the site that they're going to have to upgrade. The problem with roads is it won't go in the bond package. You cannot bond for roads going to a site. In other words, once we build this school there, if the roads need upgrading, the borough has to come through to get that either from the legislative branch or from increase in the levy. So that's a borough issue. And the borough was a main part of this, too. They had two borough assembly members on this committee, and they assured the committee that that would be done. But okay. We will see. Thank you.
Okay. All right, any other comments? Okay, so we'll take a voice vote. A yes vote means we pass this on, we approve it, and pass it on to the assembly. Mr. Larson?
Yes.
Ms. Gaddis?
Yes.
Ms. Welton is abstaining. Mr. Cordero?
Yes.
Mr. Lacey?
Yes.
Ms. Rutherford?
Yes.
Thank you. It passes unanimously.
I would like to move 13-031, resolution 13005, charter school tax rebate.
Is there a second? Can I have a second?
I'll second.
Is there any member of the public that would like to speak on this matter? Okay, staff report.
Thank you, Madam President. I've had requested Mr. Forrest to assist me. Prior to going through the detail of this, I wanted to provide some history as to where we are now with this resolution that we've included. Over the last couple of years, the board has challenged, and this is prior to me being superintendent, challenged the district to create a viable working district where there were many choices for kids, both in schools and amongst schools, and to foster a positive relationship with charters. At the time, there seemed to be some non-communication. And so that was one of my challenges and one of the objectives. And we've worked through that. And part of that, in listening to charter school principals and APC presidents, was that the local contribution provided by the borough in charter school law says that, from the state of Alaska, that all that should be, well, suggests by law that needs to be funded is the minimal, a portion of the minimal contribution plus the state. And that just really was difficult and to accept, because local contribution, the idea was that local contribution should be divided by all number of students, not the ADM, but the actual kids who were servicing in our schools, and provided equally. And so over the last couple years, we've worked with charter schools. Remember the first year when Dr. Burnley was superintendent, it didn't change. There was just some question about how it would work and what it would look like. And the second year, Mr. Forrest and I worked with the charter school principals, and it was really, I believe, the whole conversation was a matter of trust about, okay, we're getting more money, why would you give us more money? Like, what's happening here? And really, we just had the conversation that we need to acknowledge that within a district, there are actual costs at the district level for having schools and support, but there's actual costs at the schools as well, and that the best way for this to evolve is to take the funds and equally provide them per student. Now, of course, schools that are not charters do not just get a bottom line and say, here's all the kids in your school, here's the funds, because there are district-wide special services, federal programs, and instruction and business services that need to be run. But in the charter schools, what happens is, specifically for special education, a kind of an indirect is charged for that support. And so that's how we operate. If charters were not part of the district, or charter not given by the district, the charters would have to hire someone to do those services. So we take care of it in-house. So we were working through this budget last year with the charter schools, and just so you know, the board approved the budget, and the administration in our budget this year, that's what we planned for, and Mr. Forrest will go through those numbers. The same time, simultaneously, the charter schools came forward through our meetings, through charter schools, for a tax refund. And we went through over and over with the ordinance that any building that is privately owned that has public educational services in it should be eligible for a tax rebate. And we have five of our six charter schools that are in privately owned buildings. We also have Mat-Su Central that is in a privately owned building. So there were two resolutions moved forward to the borough. One, to rebate the charter schools' taxes that were paid by the owners. So the owners would take the money, if you will, out of the rent from the charter schools, and then the borough, they'd pay that to the borough, but the borough would provide it back in a rebate to the district to provide to the charter schools. We also did the very similar, same wording resolution for Mat-Su Central School. In April, as you'll see, the borough did pass with their ordinance that be provided. However, as you'll find out, It was suggested that the rebate be provided with the money that was already given. And so therein lies the question that I've received when this went into the public. The same time that the borough decided to give the tax rebate was the same year that our school board provided charter schools $1.4 million in equal share. So many questions have come to our office in regard to this. That is the history of that's happened over the last 2 years. We are in a good place with all of our schools and our principals working together. It is good, but of course when there's scarcity of monies, we just want to be sure that we're very careful and deliberate with what we do. And so with that, Mr. Forrest has the detail with which he will walk the board through our recommendation to be sure that we comply or fulfill that ordinance. Mr. Forrest.
We placed an additional manila folder at each of your spots, and we have some additional information inside. I'd like to start with the sheet that has the charter school funding difference between last year and this year. So when you look at that sheet, to emphasize what Dr. Paramo said, you can see that we start off, as per the board vote, you actually voted to do this in Talkeetna at one of the away meetings, that we would provide them, as Dr. Paramo said, the same per pupil funding as all other students based on their student count. We did, in exchange for that, however, the board may remember that originally, because they were only receiving the minimal local funding, you had reduced as a body the indirect cost to a 0.5% or half a percent. So in exchange for providing full funding, the district raised the indirect to the federally allowable indirect of 6.96%. So the top line is what the new formula generates in per pupil funding. The red line below it is the indirect. And then the line that is shaded in gray is the net budget based on the projected enrollment for the charter schools for this year. To show you the difference, we then took the original formula, recalculated it, and show that in every case, the schools, each charter school receives significantly more funds than they had in the previous year. That resulted in a net increase to all of the charter schools of $1,450,713. So as Dr. Paramo said, charter schools are receiving 100% of their share of the local funding, in addition to 100% as allowed by the state formula, and they even received the $16 per pupil in the quality schools money. Now I'd like to turn your attention to the manila folder and go all the way back to the blue sheets. We're going to go backwards forward. These two sheets are an excerpt from the assembly meeting on April 17th. And in this, the borough amended, with one reading, Resolution 12-048. And in that amendment, they indicated that it was their intent and desire that the board allocate the equivalent, the equal amount of the property tax paid by each charter school to that charter school. As Dr. Paramo indicated, in lieu of a true rebate, however, the borough only said, give them the money, but do it out of the 3% that we're already going to give the district. So I would also like to call your attention to the very last page in the document and Mr. Spiropoulos, the borough attorney's comments. I'll read them. Mr. Spiropoulos noted that the amendment is not binding, as the assembly cannot legally direct how the school board allocates funds. However, it sends a strong message as to the intent of the use of the funds. This resolution passed unanimously by the assembly. Now, if we go back to the pink section, the middle page, the last paragraph on page 2 of 3 in the pink section, this is the wording which is directing the district to provide the money to the charter schools. I read, "Be it further resolved that the Matanuska Sioux Sitna Borough Assembly hereby sets an additional amount of $139,679.60 to be added to the above minimum with the specific intent and request of the school board that this additional amount be allocated to the charter schools in the amounts equal or proportional to the amounts which charter schools have paid in property taxes under their lease obligations." There is no reference to increasing above the 3% promised to the school district to fund for this additional amount. Now we go back to the white page, the resolution that we have provided to you. Please note that we have struck the third whereas. Now if I can direct your attention to the first page in the document, the same sentence has been struck from the memo to the board, and I've added a sentence that says, "Based on the borough attorney's comments in the assembly minutes, we no longer believe this to be true." In other words, originally, we were under the belief, due to certain advice, that the board did not have an option and was obligated to pass this resolution. However, based on the borough attorney's comments, we now believe the board has full discretion as to whether or not they desire to pass this resolution. And we've struck that third whereas because it, in the words of the borough attorney, it is no longer appropriate. Questions?
Mr. Cordero?
Through the chair, okay, there are a lot of things that I can think of about, but the first one is, I think all of us remember the intent by both the borough, the charter schools, and the school board, that those charter schools that were paying the taxes would somehow benefit from some sort of rebate or a processing which they could recapture that those funds and be able to use them back in their schools. I don't know where things got lost in the process. The way that I read the resolution from the borough, regardless of the minutes or the comments from the attorney, is that the money would be in addition to what they had budgeted for the school board. So what you're saying is that our request was not honored to the full extent, and therefore they gave us less than what we requested, and now they want us to put in that additional money from our budget? Or did they... Please, I'm not understanding this.
You're stating it correctly.
Yeah.
They gave us 3%, and now... in this one paragraph at the end of that resolution, they're saying, oh, by the way, out of your 3%, we want you to send $139,000 to the charter schools.
And to further that, I mean, to in full disclosure, they made this resolution. This resolution is really perfunctory requirement by the state, because it happened early on in April, that they have to guarantee the minimal contribution. So this was just paperwork to them, kind of. Like, okay, we'll get the minimum because we know by law they have to. And, of course, through the budget process, it took lobbying and discussion to request the additional 3%. And the idea was, and it was in our budget, that Mr. Forrest and I made the effort to say, we understand that the borough has a cap in spending of 1.5%. And so knowing that, I asked them that the prior year, the year that Dr. Brindley was there, they did not increase the borough's, or the borough did not increase the school district contribution at all. They left it the same. And so I said, look at the evidence we have for you. Our kids are learning. They're great. We'd like the 1.5% to be fair because that's your personal cap, But do you remember last year we didn't get 1%, 1.5%, so would you just make it 3? And in that time, they probably didn't know that they were going to give the 3% because this is the minimal contribution. They were still in discussion. The same time, they probably didn't know that this board had already determined that they were going to give the charter schools more as well. So in the end, it's, we call it like a shell game. Sure, we'll give you a rebate, but take it out of here. But the things that they didn't know were that they actually would vote for a 3% increase. And what they didn't know is that this board already supported equal share. And that's why we're in this quagmire. I don't think there's anything wrong here or there or who did what. It's just that in reality, if we do this, there's not equal share anymore. And that's why it's a big discussion for the board, because your goal was to make equal share, and this would top it by $139,000.
Just to follow up with that, I completely understand the equal share concept that you're talking about, because a lot of parents and principals and teachers were talking about that the funding should follow the student, and if they were not getting the board contribution in the past, that they should, because these are also taxpayers that we're talking about. However, the issue of the property taxes is separate and should be separate from the issue of contributions and equal share. And I think we're kind of talking about two different issues here. My concern is that the intent, at least my understanding from our multiple meetings with charter schools, from our own conversations on the school board, President Powder and I served on a committee that dealt with charter school issues, and the intent by members of the assembly was that this would be in addition to, particularly for those schools that had to deal with the property taxes. And it had nothing to do with the equalization of whether or not they were getting the contribution or not. And so I personally would like to postpone this until we get a real clarification from the assembly as to whether that was the intent or not, because something got lost in the process.
And through the president, I'd just like to say that I totally agree with you, Mr. Cordero.
Member Gattis?
Well, I couldn't have said it better. I remember the same thing. And I don't know if it got lost in the paperwork, somebody doing the paperwork, it came out. But I can tell you that I believe most of the assembly members believe that as well. So I don't know if there's a way to go backwards and do what the, you know, a do-over, if you will. But I believe that that was their intent.
Mr. Larson.
This resolution from the borough was not picked up by our administrative staff, so the $139,000 will come out of our operating costs. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
So that's about 1.5 FTE that we would lose by paying property tax because it was not budgeted in our budget. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
So why wasn't it picked up and put into the budget?
As Dr. Paramo indicated, this is a perfunctory resolution normally that is done by the borough. It's required by statute that they do so by within 30 days of receiving the school district budget. They're required to authorize at least the minimal funding. It was done on one reading. We were not furnished a copy of the result of the ordinance, and we didn't go look at it.
So my question, I guess, would be to the borough assembly members that there is about 15 questions I have here. But one question is tax rebate obviously can't be done through the tax borough ordinance. In other words, you can't go to somebody that owns a building that has a charter school in it and rebate it through the tax laws. You have to go around the circle in order to do this. Is that correct? In other words, you just can't say, hey, since you have a private, charter school, you don't pay property tax. You still got to pay it. But the borough then would take that money that they get and give it to the school district to give it to the charter school as a, what you had a term for it, as an indirect contribution or on behalf of, that
right.
type of thing?
That's right.
Okay. But in this case, I would wonder if the borough legislators know that if we do rebate this year, that it's going to cost 1.5 FTE someplace. We're going to lose a staff and a half to rebate the property tax. I would wonder if, I know that's not their intent at all, but somehow this didn't get into our budget. And if we pay the $139,000, it's going to cost our operating budget. It's going to cost a position and a half this year to rebate it. That's the question. And the second question is, are we going to go through this every year? They're going to have to pass a resolution every year from the borough side saying, hey, if we give you any extra money, $139,000, or if we don't give you any like they did 2 years ago, you're going to have to take the $139,000 out of the money that we're not going to give you extra. Is there a method for them to collect the tax and pass it on like the state does on pensions on behalf of, and avoid all this and directly give that money on behalf of to the charter school and not go through our operating budget? Is there any way of doing that so we don't run into this every year? And this year we're going to lose a position and a half if we do this. Am I incorrect on these statements?
You're not incorrect, and it is the borough attorney who has stated that they cannot rebate the money to the individual owning the building. So he's made that determination.
But can the borough then, in a separate allocated fund, just give it directly to the charter school and not go through the school district? In other words, they collect $139,000 in taxes, and they give that $139,000 back to the charter schools.
I don't want to speak for the borough,
okay.
But I would say that they could not. The only way to give it to the school would be if they had a 501c3 that was set up for each school. And even then, I'm not sure the borough is authorized to donate public funds.
So they could do it on behalf of, similar to what the state does with the pension money that comes through, right?
I'm not sure that they legally can do that. For instance, I know for a fact in the state of California that would not be allowed.
So what you're telling every year that we're going to have to figure out how to give up $139,000 out of our operating budget or put that in our budget somehow, even though the borough has no obligation to give us that additional funds.
Through the, I would like to, through the president, in any new given year, what you could possibly do, so we're not at the place we are, is whatever funds the borough gives, we would basically take the property tax out of that and then divide the rest of the money between equally. To do the mathematics on it. The issue this year is just that we have already divided the money and then found this out on top of it. There's probably many ways that the borough could operate and figure this out. We could figure it out by saying, can we just pay in CIP money or not? We're just trying to stay to the letter of the law. But like I said earlier, there are some things that I am not sure that the Assembly, as Mr. Cordero said, and Lingettis, that I don't think that they're all aware of what actually happened through administration. And so we could do it. But in future years, because we know about it, certainly we could adjust and figure this out. It's a primary problem this year because of what was already dispersed.
Okay, one quick follow-up, but this, the ordinance is this year. It doesn't say next year or 2 years or 10 years down the line. I guess what I'm getting at is if this is going to be a consistent thing, the borough would have to do something different than a single ordinance for year to year. Is that correct?
They would, but in their authorization of the above minimum, they could state the intent. I want to go back to what their own attorney said. They cannot direct the school board to do this. So, and that's their attorney speaking. So they would have to rely on the good faith of the school district.
we could certainly, as Dr. Paramo said, budget that in. I want to point out that in the memo we point out very clearly this year it's the equivalent of $8.62 per student for every other non-charter student. So I think we need to be clear that even if we did know, we would still be effectively giving more money to the charter students than we are to all the other kids in the district if this were to follow through, unless the borough gives additional funding. Without the additional funding, we by definition are taking money from all other kids to pay this bill.
Mr. Cordero?
Just a quick comment. And I think that before I move to table this, because I will, in regards to the changes that happened last year, my understanding, too, is that charter schools has now been charged for services that in the past were being kind of subsidized by the district. So while they may have gotten more money, my understanding is that from what I hear from some principals is that now some of the services are actually higher than what they were before. So they've been standardized across the board. Having said that, before we move any further, and you can clarify it later, I would like to move to postpone this, to table this, so that administration can get a better clarification from the borough manager and perhaps the assembly on whether or not there was an intent to increase the funding in addition to what we requested to cover for this. The way as this is, at least your interpretation, it's very concerning. And so I would like to have this clarified. I would like additional information before I could vote on something, on a resolution like this. So that's my move to table.
There's a point of order. I don't think all the members were able to talk on this issue before the tabling.
Thank you. I would like to comment. I'd like to ask some questions. The point of the resolution, and why do we have to do this resolution, and why can't it just, we have to say what we're doing with this fund, with these funds, and why we're doing it. What is the, I'm trying to understand why are we doing the resolution, just, so it's clearer in my head. Do we have to? Is there a regulation?
This is the impact of amending the budget, and it would be inappropriate for the administration to amend the budget for $139,000, taking, as I indicated, $8.62 from, $16,000 or $15,000 plus students to give to 2,000 students or 1,500, without the board having knowledge of that. Administratively, certainly we could do that, but that would be violating the trust I believe we're wanting to build with the board with regard to your knowledge of how the funds are being dispersed.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Gattis?
Yeah, I just want to make a final comment. I would caution us passing this resolution at this time rather than getting more information. We have a pretty good working ship with our borough assembly, and I know that their intent was to give the tax monies back to those charter schools that paid them. So I don't know that we would be honoring their intent, and I would rather table this, get more information, than cause problems with the borough assembly. I don't see the downside at this point.
Ms. Rutherford?
Yes, I just wanted to point out to answer Mr. Cordero's question. On our spreadsheet that we were given here, this indirect fee is that is the term for the extra expenses you were talking about that those principals are talking about. They are being charged now, but even considering that money they're being charged, they're still ending up ahead of last year.
I move to table this until administration gets an opportunity to clarify the issue with the borough manager and their staff and perhaps the assembly, and if we don't if the issue continues to be a problem, perhaps this is something that should be on the agenda with the joint school board borough meeting, because certainly it's a concern.
I'll second that. Also, I want to add the fact that if we do honor this year, that it will come out of our operation funds, which will cause us to $139,000 out of operations, which is 1.5 FTE. Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to vote on tabling. Mr. Larson?
Yes.
Ms. Gaddis?
Yes.
Mrs. Welton?
Yes.
Mr. Cordero?
Yes.
Mr. Lacey?
Yes.
Mrs. Rutherford?
Yes.
Thank you. That's tabled.
Madam President, I take a break.
We'll take a 10-minute break. Okay, we're back in session, and we're to non-action items. All right, and our non-action item is the resolution for the food pantry of Wasilla. Do I have anyone from the audience who would like to speak?
I'm the president of the Wasilla Food Pantry Board. Food Pantry Board has been quite busy. As you know, we're one of the largest food pantries in the valley. We're serving over 3,500 people a month. And what happens is we're in a small building behind the Good Shepherd Lutheran Church on Bogart Road. And about 3 to 4 years ago, the school board, in its graciously, let us use the warehouse in the Iditarod School, elementary school in Wasilla, as a storage place. And we have really want to thank you for that, and we would like to keep that going, because it helps us a lot. We have all our storages over there, and we do have quite a bit of food over there, and the place where we are is not big enough to hold it, so we would like you to continue letting us use that facility. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Eddie Azella. I'm the executive director of the Food Pantry of Wasilla, and we wanted to just come forward tonight and thank this board for all their support in the past and hopefully in the future. It's a great thing that we can use the Iditarod storage. It really, really helps us a lot, and we are asking for your continued support with that. Thank you.
Would anyone else like to speak on this? All right. Do we have a staff who can answer questions, if there's any from the board? Does the board have any questions?
Madam President, it's not really a question, but I would like to make sure that we help this program in perpetuity, I guess is the proper word for it. They do a lot of good stuff for the community, and as a government entity, this is something that we should be helping.
Mr. Larson?
I may have a slight conflict of interest. I go to Good Shepherd Lutheran Church. I've been going there for over 30 years, or around 30 years. My wife and I and children, and now my grandchildren are going there, by the way. We were there when the food pantry started in the basement of that church, and I've been direct and indirect involved in the food pantry over those years, either through donation or through time, or my children, or my wife, and now my grandchildren. So I don't know if it would be a conflict of interest, and I'm throwing that out there for a determination. Thank you.
Does anyone on the board feel that that would be a conflict of interest? This isn't something we're voting on this time. We would be talking about it next meeting. Mrs. Welton.
Well, I have to admit I may have a conflict of interest as well, as I'm on the parent board that helps appoint their board people to the food pantry, and I volunteer and bring food in on a regular basis through a couple of different organizations that I am involved in. And that's, I'll throw it out there to you.
Okay. Mrs. Gattis.
Okay, I wasn't going to be funny and say I may, but I may also have a conflict of interest. Beyond the fact that I do eat food, I've spent many years with the Boy Scouts collecting food, utilizing this facility as well. And I don't think it is a conflict. I think it's what our community does and our give back to our community. And I don't think any of these conflicts that we've brought forward really are a conflict for this particular food pantry.
Okay, with that, we will send it on to next meeting to vote on. Thank you. Oh, Mrs. Welton.
Just to make another comment, I was on the board when they asked to use the Iditarod space, and I helped move that so that it would happen through the work of our former superintendent. He helped push that forward. In fact, he contacted me to make sure that I would bring it forward and make sure that it would go through, not that he had to twist my arm about it. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next one is discussion item, letter to site selection committee regarding priorities.
Madam President, Lynn Gattis is prepared to speak.
Thank you. Yeah, I do. Many of you have heard our concerns on the school site selection committee and our ups and downs and kind of the messiness of picking out a school site. And I think we've done a pretty good job all in all. I'd like to read the letter so that we're all clear. And it is my thought and my belief that what the school district's issue is and mission in choosing a school. To the Mat-Su Borough Manager and Site Selection Committee members, the Mat-Su Borough Board of Education very much appreciates the opportunity to participate in the school site selection process for the children in our district. The school board believes that our school should be placed closest to the population in which it serves. We believe this is to be safer for our children, as well as lowering the cost of transportation when a school is placed in the community where the children live. The school board believes in making these community buildings part of the very community where our children live. We put cameras on the buildings and open the gates to provide the community the opportunity to use these sites when they're not in session. The board believes that in order to maintain a site selection process above reproach, it is imperative that the committee utilize a predetermined matrix to guide the evaluation process. Such a rubric provides the committee with an objective basis in which a common goal is pursued: great schools in great locations. Furthermore, the use of a matrix assists in creating a more open, transparent process, which is better for everyone. Lastly, the Matanuska-Susitna Borough Board of Education wishes to acknowledge that it is ultimately the responsibility of the borough to select future school sites, and that the school board's participation on the Matanuska-Susitna Borough Area School Site Selection Committee in no way supersedes or usurps this authority. And I'd like to have a discussion before we agree on this to send it upstairs, just to basically indicate where the school board's position is on locating schools.
Okay, so this is open for discussion. Do I have anyone who wants to make comment?
Okay,
Mr. Cordero, then Mrs. Rutherford.
Madam President, through the President, Dr. Paramo, does this letter conflict with anything currently in board policy?
Through the President, no, it does not. It specifically clarifies our intent of participation
on the school site selection and clarifies that we want a deliberate process.
As long as we're sending a letter, is this everything that we want in the way of changes with this committee? I mean, if we're going to open this discussion about what our priorities are through this committee, isn't it the opportune time to discuss the ordinance that created the committee and whether or not it's properly manned?
Through the President, this letter is in response to a direct request to answer some questions from John Moosey. And so I believe the site selection members, as well as myself and Mr. Forrest and Mr. Fulp, received it. And due to the joint meeting that this board had earlier this year, there was some conflict and some concerns about how the groups work together. So a specific question was answered about how do you want the groups to work together in an email, and says, please send me that answer. And the school site members put their thoughts together and drafted this letter in response to that specific request by Mr. Moosey, the manager of the borough.
If that's correct.
It is. And if I may, the school site selection has gone down many different trails, looking at EPA, looking at farmlands and things like that. And what my focus, and that's basically what we're saying, is about our school kids. Where we locate our kids, our school board has said that locating our schools closest to our population is what our goal is. Although we do understand, and that's the last paragraph, that it is certainly the Mat-Su Borough Assembly's job to be able to ultimately choose what location and what factors they're going to factor in. We're factoring in our children, where the population is, and what our school is to that community or that population of children. And the rest of it is a bigger picture done by the Assembly in the borough.
Mr. Larson.
Also, this includes various sites for various schools that may or may not be in our bond issue, that may or may not actually be there, but other assembly people feel schools should be in certain areas. So what this is saying is you can do that. What we're concentrating on is the best location for our future kids and to possibly take some of those kids out of the overcrowding schools. The borough owns all the buildings, owns all the properties, finds all the sites, and builds all the buildings. And what we want to concentrate on is the school, not the design, but the programs that go in it and how we can alleviate the overcrowding in certain schools. The rest is all up the borough. I'm thankful that we can be on this committee. I have not been thankful in the past, but I guess I'm thankful for being able to survive a committee and learning how to work well with people, I guess. And I will endeavor to continue to do that, so hopefully this letter will clarify what they need.
Mr. Cordero?
I support this letter, and I certainly support the concept of using a predetermined matrix to make sure that the committee or the assembly, they're objective in the process that they use. But the only comment that I have, and it might just be a cosmetic change, is on the third paragraph, the second sentence, which says, we have put cameras on the building and opened the gates to provide the community the opportunity to use these sites when they are not in session. I'm not necessarily sure that what the purpose of putting the reference to cameras is, so can you explain?
Yes, and that was this letter was something that I put together. And if you'll remember, we opened up our schools. We as a board said, unlock the gates, allow the taxpayers, our community, to be able to utilize those schools when we're not using them. They're paying for it. Their tax dollars are. We shouldn't lock them out. So I'm reminding our in this letter that this school becomes part of the community wherever we build it. So it's their school where their children live. It's part of their community that they can utilize after hours. And maybe I could have said it a little differently, but that was my intent.
If I may, then my suggestion would be, you know, simply that the school board or the school district has taken the steps to open up our schools. I just don't see the purpose of specifically saying we put cameras. But I understand the intent. Thank you.
I do have one comment. I believe we have given the school site selection committee a list of school sites that we need. And I think it might be nice if we put in here we have a list of sites and, you know, if we can follow those lists to purchase the ones we need first.
I've certainly got no problem with that.
All right. If there isn't any more comments on this, we will move on to our work session, which is the board self-evaluation.
Madam President, there has been, over the last three board meetings, some work done by this board on a self-evaluation. I have requested Mr. Schleich to assist with the facilitation, and he is going to practice brevity this evening. And I ask it to be just simple, but really it's the purpose is to not necessarily dissect the board evaluation, but to share what possibilities can come and why we do it, and to just review those items in board policy, the purpose that AASB sees in a board evaluation, and just to make this a springboard for the future. And with that, Mr. Schleich will have a short presentation, and then any questions that can be asked, just certainly do so.
Thank you, Superintendent Paramo. I will do my best to be brief here. You can see the slides on your screen?
Not yet.
Oh. We're still the shading gap. I see it's up here, and we're just going to go ahead and move on here. I don't know if he's going to be able to get that up or not. The board self-evaluation process, just a reminder about what we do in our school district. It's really about continuous improvement. We encourage and expect from our directors, our principals, our superintendent, our teachers, and our students to go through this process of self-reflection and evaluation of themselves in the effort that they will continually improve. And it's great that you are also, as the board, modeling that for us and involved in that situation as well. We are going to provide for you tonight a nice folder that has three different items in it. One of them is your own board policy 9400 about self-evaluation. It's a nice policy to refer to. Also, a document from the Alaska Association of School Boards called Board Standards, a framework for Alaska school boards. Another very nice document. And then finally, a tally sheet that's different than the tally sheet that you had received by email, I think in the board briefs last week, and we'll show you why.
One moment. There's some folks looking for this, and in good teaching etiquette, the folder will be passed out at the end because it has all the results, and generally in a classroom, when a teacher's discussing and making a point, we don't give the kids the information so that their attention would be on the lesson. So sorry about those that were searching for it.
But I can show you what they look like. This is what that board policy looks like, okay? And this is what the cover of that board standards document looks like. And a little bit about the assessment process. You completed this, and gratefully, all seven board members, I realize we have a new board member, and you didn't have any input into this, but board member Dunleavy did complete one as well. You completed this. It had the tool, the instrument, had 20 standard statements, And there were really 60 individual indicators. There was a lot of work to complete that. It was in the categories of effective and needs improvement and not effective. And so you went through that process, and we gathered all that data, and we're going to present that in a moment here. The power is in the conversations that can be had as a result of looking at the results. Remember, your board policy is reminding us that even though you're seven individuals, we want to look at this as a board. Okay, this is looking at it as a body. It really can allow for a lot of intentionality and purposefulness, and we're going to encourage focus. You're not going to be able to look at all 60 of those indicators effectively, and we're going to ask you to really narrow that down. Additional thoughts about the process is, again, thank you for participating in it. The results are, Tyler, I'm going to show you, we think it's an easier way to see it because the indicators are right on there. Collectively, you are going to need to, we encourage you to choose that focus, one or two items, and then as you enter into those conversations, be open for goals or actions that might emerge as a result of the rubric and the discussions that you've had. So, there were 27 of the 60 indicators that when I went through there, you collectively either defined as effective or outstanding in your own individual assessment. And so I thought that was really a nice demonstration of consensus. Almost half of these things, you saw yourself individually as an effective in that particular indicator. And so those all will be indicated with a smiley face. Then there were 12 indicators that was near consensus. All but one person, an outlier, had indicated effectiveness. And so then you have to start asking, is one person going to really drive this? As opposed to the other 20 items, which were really not as clear. And you'll see when we pull the rubric up that two or three individuals saw maybe this particular trait as being effective, and two or three saw it as being ineffective, or even further down the strata as in needs improvement. So here's what that one of the pages is going to look like. This is the front page. This is the actual rubric. Each box has a check mark indicating one of your own self-assessments as an individual. The bottom has the key. The smiley face is those things that where we were in concurrence. None on this page had that particular consensus. If it's highlighted, we're drawing your attention to that because that's one of those areas where there was enough discrepancy to ask. If it had a smiley face plus one, that's one of those where it's near consensus with one outlier. I'm going to take it to page 5. Remember, there were 11 pages in this document that's going to be given to you in just a moment. And so this has all three examples. Those first three were consensus, and you can see that everybody indicated either effectiveness or outstanding in those particular areas. The next one was one of those outliers where three people thought it was outstanding, three people thought it was effective, and one person thought needs improvement. And my own personal thinking is that that's probably close enough to consensus to not necessarily spend time on that one. But then the last two indicators in here, you can see, we've highlighted these, and all throughout the document, the ones that are highlighted are these ones where there's kind of a range of thoughts about from individual board members about where you are on this continuum. So 3.2C, for example, one person saw you as effective as a board, three people saw it in needs an improvement, and three people saw it as ineffective. And so that might be one worth doing this. Now, what we suggest, what I would like to recommend that you do is you get these things, and on your own time, you go through and look at them. It's really rich data, especially to see how everybody, and I don't know if you'll remember individually how you weighed in on each of these things. And then think about, as a board, decide if and when you want to spend some more time to revisit this document. And if you were, a quick, easy way to return to this would be to think, what would my individual three priorities be? And perhaps we could come back at a future time, and you would have be given each three markers or stickers, and we would collectively put them on. You would each have your priorities represented, and you might see some consensus emerge in terms of the kinds of things that you as a board collectively would like to focus on. Again, focusing on one or maybe two of those indicators could emerge in a board goal or some other actions that you could specifically take in order to improve in that area. So that's kind of what we had prepared tonight, to just kind of take you through that process. Superintendent Paramo is handing out the folder that includes those three. See how we let you pay attention until we know when we give this assessment data back. It's like when we give children back their tests, or after we do an instructional tour and we give teachers feedback. They like to go right to the data, which is really an encouraging thing. We love the feedback, and this is a good way to do that. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer. I know Dr. Paramo would be too. Mr. Larson.
Mr. Schleich, how are you doing? So how would you suggest, if we came to a consensus of one or two items that we needed improvement on, how would you suggest the board go about doing this through a work session, or we go meet out in the parking lot, or, you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't encourage the parking
you're
lot.
And remember, you're not talking to teachers or students. You're talking to politicians, you know. So how would you suggest that we actually make this effective if we do go down this path?
You know, a really common way that boards do this is in a retreat format. And I know systematically, your policy says to visit this in the first quarter of the fiscal year. And so that kind of happens right around July 1st. And that summertime is a really refreshing time. You'll have your newest board member who will have been here for a year and had some experiences to draw from. I think setting aside some time, like in a retreat fashion, you could have the president facilitate such a thing. You could bring in a facilitator to do that. I think it's good to set aside a fixed amount of time to spend on it, because these kinds of things can go on and on and on as much as members want to do that. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Yes, it does. Because and you would suggest just one or two or areas during that retreat, and not try to tackle the whole thing. Because I think the assessment will show where we need improvement, and some of them will self-improve anyway. Am I going to read that correctly?
You know, the beautiful thing about a document like this is that when we just read through it, we become more cognizant and aware of the things that we are supposed to be doing collectively as a board. We like giving children rubrics like this before they start a project. They're more likely to be successful because they know what the expectations are. And so I believe just going through the process of what you did, you became a better board. You take it to another level when you begin having conversations around it and maybe set some measurable goals around some things. For example, one of the items, I don't want to recommend this item, but you have a new board member on here, and you are not in consensus about how effective you are as a board in orienting new board members. And so just being aware of that might cause you to do some things right now to welcome our newest board member and helping her to become oriented to the complexities of being a school. And I know it's already probably happened with some of you as individuals and with the staff, but it's that kind of process by just being aware of the things that are described in here. The other thing I would add, too, is not everything in this is going to be as relevant to you. Remember, this document was created for 53 school districts in the state of Alaska. Some of those school districts have only 300 students in them, and they're in a roadless area. And I would suggest that there's probably some things that are more relevant in this document for them than for us, and vice versa.
Ms. Rutherford?
I was just wondering, some items don't have seven check marks. So does that mean some board members completely left some of them blank?
It does. And it also, there's, if you did the math, you would notice that even though there are 69 indicators, it only added up to 59 or 60 indicators, because one of the items, there was so many question marks. Board members, instead of putting an X on that one, they put question mark, suggesting to me, what I interpreted was, I just don't really understand what this is, and I need more help. One of the ones that comes to mind was, there is a indicator about the asset framework, and there are some board members who were not familiar with that language, and that could be an action right there. It's like, just if there were some question marks, let's just find out what that is about, so we are just more aware of that.
So are there any suggestions of how the board wants to move forward with this? Member Welton?
I would like to see us have a fall retreat. I realize that, we'll have packed schedules coming up, but if we could have a few hours to really look at this, because I do think that it's important. If we don't understand assets, we probably should also have a presentation on assets. And I think I know somebody who could do that.
Thank you. Neil?
Through the president, I would like to have fall retreat, too. I think it was a good idea from Member Welton.
Ms. Gaddis?
I guess I'm thinking, is there an advantage for using this fresh information while it's still fresh and doing something like the fall retreat that they're discussing, or is there any advantage in waiting to springtime? I'm looking for the pros and cons, if you will.
Go ahead. I'm just going to speak up just because I'm involved in the retreat and the goal setting for the district, and while this is a board goal, I am absolutely sure it'd probably involve a lot of administrative time, and there really is a full docket this year. And I would suggest allowing people to review it, to have informal discussions, but to actually to have some teeth into it, actually set, maybe a fall retreat is good, but to not set those goals until the new year. Knowing what is already present in the challenges and the objectives for this year that were signed and driven. But also we do have a new board member, so that wouldn't exclude any type of orientation or things like that, but an understanding or even a work session to understand this and chat about it informally. But I just caution for more objectives presented to the school district to get completed.
Mrs. Gaddis?
I don't know what the options are, but I've noticed a few things on there that really intrigue me and are somewhat troublesome. So I don't think I want to go through, a whole year without addressing some of the issues. But at the same time, I don't think that we need to make it really full-blown retreat. But there are some issues that clearly there are at least one or two board members that think it's a concern, and I think they should be addressed. So, I'd like to look at it, maybe not in full-blown retreat, but maybe an hour or so. And I don't know how to get that information out from the people, what they meant by, and then there's some checks that really need to be addressed. So I don't know how to get that out, but I'd like to spend an hour or so looking at it.
Mrs. Welton?
I don't want to put any more work on staff and administration. Is this something that the executive board could put together to do rather than instead of having the administration do it all? We would still need the space here and stuff, but we could set it up that we don't need to use administrative time.
I certainly think that we can do that, and I think because this is a self-assessment, just having a work session amongst ourselves to talk about these issues without burdening administration is certainly doable.
Mr. Larson?
Well, I agree with all of the above, but I would also like to see somebody like Mr. Schleich there to moderate, because the concerns are on all seven board members, and if we had one of the board members as a moderator, that doesn't make sense. I mean, I would like to at least to see a moderator there to keep us on track, because I may, not speaking for myself, I may get off track a little bit, and it would be nice to have somebody to pull me back in. And if say, the president was a moderator, you wouldn't really be able to, you may be one of these X's all the way down at the bottom, too. And how are you going to be able to voice your opinion if you're the moderator? It would just be nice to have a third party there to keep the board on track. Thank you.
Mr. Cordero?
And perhaps we can talk about those details by email and maybe come up with some potential dates once we all get a chance to look at our calendars and those
okay.
things.
Okay, so this would be a work session, so it would be a public meeting. So we would need to look at a time that we can all get together and still have time to notice the public of this meeting. So that's what we'll do. We'll contact by email and set up a time that we can meet. Okay.
And through the president, just one more thing on that. Mr. Schleich has volunteered to assist, and so we can, that's certainly possible. And I guess I was just referring to myself. No more work. But certainly we would be willing, and I just really appreciate those comments, Ms. Welton. So thank you, and that is certainly absolutely viable.
All right, so we're moving on to future items, future business. The next meeting we have is, well, I'm sorry, the next thing we have coming up is the November 1 through 4, the AASB Annual Conference at in Anchorage at Captain Cook. Do we have people who are going to that? Ms. Welton? Ms. Gaddis? Okay, Mr. Larson? Ms. Rutherford? No? Okay, so it sounds like we have quite a few people going to that. Okay. All right, so November 7th is our next meeting, a regular school board meeting here. And we're going to be on the agenda as MATSU Central School Policies. Does anybody have anything else they want to add? Mr. Lacey.
Thank you, through the president. Yes, I would like to, many of you know that I'm was injured in an industrial accident working for the state, and I'm currently going to school. And in asking the administration, I found out that we do not have an industrial hygiene program. I would like to submit this for review for the school district to implement an industrial hygiene program. We are the largest employer in the borough. About 3,000 employees, as I'm told. And an industrial hygiene program, what it does is, let's say that Ms. Snyder out there is a welder for us, and she welds stainless steel during the daytime. Welding stainless steel puts out something called a hexavalent chromium that can be ingested, and a monitoring process is needed for that. An industrial hygiene program looks at all this stuff, and it protects our employees. The next question people might ask is, how the heck are you going to pay for this? I just got a report here that shows, and I assume risk management is everything to do with workers' compensation. We spent $1.7 million, or budgeted $1.7 million for this. I think that's a little too much. And for a research project next semester, I'm going to do a research project specifically about industrial hygiene programs and how much we spend on workers' compensation. So thank you. I will give this to the superintendent.
All right. Mr. Larson?
Yeah, for scheduling purposes, I believe the school site selection committee was on the 25th of this month, was canceled, and was moved to the 29th of November. And for future items, we need to go over committee positions. Is that going to take place next?
I think we can put it on the agenda for the next meeting.
Okay. So the school site selection committee, for some reason, was moved. We generally just get an email that says that that happens, and so it's now on the 29th of November instead of the 25th of October.
Okay. Anyone else? Mrs. Welton?
I assume you will be assigning people new to the committees, and so that needs to be on there for the next time.
Okay. Mr. Cordero?
I'm assuming that those attending the ASB conference, there are opportunities to go over Robert's rules. And I had mentioned at a previous meeting, it would be great just to get a refresher at one of our future board meetings for all of us. Because there are times and again, there are some issues that we had to look up and need
I think
to know how to
good.
Go with. So.
Okay. All right. Our next item is persons to be heard on non-agenda items. The same rules apply as our first persons to be heard on non-agenda items. Is there anyone who would like to speak before the board? Okay, seeing none, we will move on. Correspondence and board committee reports. Does anybody have correspondence or committee reports? No? Ms. Gaddis?
Well, I was going to briefly go through the joint school board assembly meeting, and we covered a lot of the things in our discussion today, be it the bond items or the school site selection. So I think that we have covered that previously in our meeting, and I don't know if I missed anything, but Mrs. Welton was there. So I just want to say I'm not, not reporting on it, but, you know, again, we covered it in other parts of our meeting.
Okay. All right. So we are to comments from the school board and administration. Ms. Paramo.
I do believe we have a guest in the audience. I think Mr. Forrest and I think alike, so I'll turn it over to Mr. Forrest.
I failed to notice earlier that Bob Bechtel is here with us from the borough, and I'd like to introduce Bob to those of you who are not aware of who he is.
Thanks, Ken. Yeah, my name is Bob Bechtel. I'm project manager with the Mattsu Borough, and President Poucher knows that I managed the construction of the Nutrition Center along with the Career Tech High School, the McIntosh Elementary School, which now has asphalt all the way to it. Shaw Elementary School, Principal Carl there is familiar with that building. And a number of other ones, Academy Charter School, and right now doing the addition to that. So when you start doing a lot of work and you get more work, so they give it to the people that get the work done. So they asked me to be a liaison to the school district from the borough public works. Looking forward to doing that. Not sure what the job all entails yet. In a way, it's a little depressing because I might not be at managing the new high school, which would be a downer for me because I was looking forward to doing that a year ago. And looking forward to doing it now that the site selection has been completed. Hoping to start that in January. Really can't do a design for the school until you have a site selected. So the other thing is making sure that we have good communications. For the last 8 years, we've had a monthly meeting with some great guys back there, Dave Anderton, Don Carney, and their crew. And in that monthly meeting, we go in great detail through each project that we manage. And it's about 8 or 9 pages long. And I don't want to bore you with all that detail, but it's we go through each project and discuss ways to do things better. And we've worked together to develop the design criteria manual to try to make standardization for school so that when we build them, we're not repeating mistakes that we've made in the past. So looking forward to working with you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ken.
Mr. Stone? No comment.
I would just like to make a general comment that we had a fantastic activity yesterday and today at North Bowl with the statewide Special Olympics. There were 270 students, able-bodied students, as well as our peers in special education, participated in this great event. And Matt Sue, I was told by the director statewide of Special Olympics that Matt Sue does the best job in the entire state with these programs. And so you should be proud of Lucy Hope and her team. So thank you very much. You're great. And as a reminder that we have parent-teacher conferences coming up next Thursday and Friday. The end of the quarter was this previous Friday, and we look for many parents to call in or come in or electronically come in. It doesn't matter the mode, the modality. It's the connection that counts for that. And I was going to, I'll leave it to Kendra McPhail to discuss what's happening at Wasilla High next week during those conferences, because it's a student government issue. But I just thank the board, welcome the new board member, and welcome back our longest standing board member, Ms. Welton, and I look forward to a fantastic year. Thank you.
Mrs. McPhail.
Next week, Wasilla High School will be hosting the OSOG conference, which is the Alaska Association of School Boards, which brings all the student government, student governments around the state to Wasilla High School, and that will be through the 26th through the 29th, I believe.
All right. Mr. Larson, do you have any comments?
Yes, always. I just want to thank the Board Connect again. I can't get over how much I enjoy that. I enjoyed the section about grading online that the elementary principals are actively pushing, and hopefully that whole issue will become just routine. And again, I appreciate that information that comes through. It really helps out a lot. I also want to welcome Debbie Rutherford, our new member. Good luck. If you want to sit on the school site selection committee, I'll give up my position for you. It's a really Jim Dandy committee. You'll leave with a smiling face every time you go there. Welcome aboard. Thank you. And congratulations to all our new member, our new president, vice president, and secretary, Boucher, Cordero, and Welton. Congratulations. Thank you.
Mrs. Gattis?
No comment.
Mrs. Welton?
Yes, I just wanted to say that for those of us who are going to the AASB to make sure we take notes so that we can bring back the information. I mean, if we're going to ask our school, our students to bring back information, we need to do that too, and we need to be able to disseminate that, what we've learned. The other thing, I was at Justice Coalition meeting this morning, and I want to tell you that some great connections were made. It was great conversations about the facilities and programs that are there for our youth in the community. Director Hope was there substituting for Mr. McPhail and did a great job and took lots of notes and is going to help with connecting people up to things that the district has to offer, and it's great. I want to thank, again, the voters of the community as well as the board, and I will try to see how I can enhance the job of clerk. I don't know. You've had it for how many years in a row?
A long time, and I have some ideas.
Okay. And congratulations, President Boucher and Vice President Cordero.
Thank you. Member Cordero.
Thank you for the comments. A few things. I had the honor of being invited by the folks at Jaber to make a presentation during Hispanic Heritage Month. As it happens, I'm one of three, as far as I know, elected officials in the state of Alaska who is of Hispanic heritage. And Dr. Paramo and Mr. Cole were there. It was a great opportunity to talk about my culture. Sadly, a lot of people still think of Hispanics as an ethnic group, but it's not. It's a culture made up of many ethnicities. But it was a great event. And also I went to Wasilla High over the weekend. They had a fundraiser event for their volleyball team, and they had Hawaiian dancers, and it was great food, amazing food, and it was just wonderful. So thank you for the vote to all the board members. Welcome. Member Rutherford, I've known Member Rutherford for several years. We were both involved with the Palmer Rotary Club, and so I know I've known her for a while. And Member Walton, congratulations on your re-election.
Mr. Lacey?
Yes, on the day of the flood, I had a chance to go over and visit the warehouse department and food service. I've got to tell you straight up that Chris Johnson runs one of the cleanest operations I have ever seen. You could eat off the floor of that place. He's a forward thinker when it comes to back problems. You look around the food service, everything that's in the coolers are stacked up on pallets to reduce back injuries. That's an engineering control that I think that he should be giving kudos for. Also, I met a lady by the name of Barbara Bowe, who's been with us for over 25 years. She's a cook in the kitchen. Another fellow that I met was Mark Kramer, who's a warehouse driver. These people are a credit to our organization. Later on in the week, I went to Wasilla High School and spent a seven-period day with them. I was in Faith Brunholz's class, Tim Walter's class, Tony Jensen's class, and Jill Schoeman's class. It was interesting for me because Faith and Tim were teaching exactly the same subject, and being a longtime teacher myself, to see something taught and within an hour of each other a different way was quite interesting to see. And I just want to thank all of these teachers for and our employees for giving their 110%.
Member Rutherford?
Thank you. I'd just like to say, first of all, that staff has been nothing but professional, efficient, and patient with me this last week in getting me started. I also want to say that I'm looking forward to seeing Mr. Bob Bechtel at every single meeting or one of his representatives to help with the communication of our constituents about that generous bond package they approved. And I'm honored to be here, and I look forward to the ride.
Okay, I'd like to say thank you for electing me president. I'm going to endeavor to have brief meetings and get all of the agenda items covered. Welcome, Ms. Rutherford. We're happy to have you. And welcome back, Mrs. Welton. We're happy to have you, too. Thank you.
I'd like to make a motion that we end this meeting.
Second.